This is Eric Krakauer from BN Sports, and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Vem jogar por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o gol a Figo, e a bola é gol! O gol da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, Rui Costa vai, acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo! 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 Vai para o Cristiano Ronaldo, está em jogado Cristiano Ronaldo, vai para Cristiano Ronaldo!
And we welcome you to episode number 28 of the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. We welcome you into the first episode of 2020 of the Seleção Podcast. Of course, we are a proud partner of Portugal.net. We have a great show coming up for you today as we will be discussing the winter transfer window that just shut a few days back. We will get the opinion and the thoughts of the winter transfer window of Sean Gillen of Portugal.net. He, of course, covers everything Portuguese abroad for Portugal.net, and he will have his thoughts on obviously the big move, Bruno Fernandes heading over to Manchester United, finally getting his move from Sporting probably a year and a half, almost 2 years later than what everybody thought, but he finally gets his move to the Premier League, and he is a Red Devil from this day forward. We'll also obviously look at some of the other moves. Daniel Pedence, he goes to Wolverhampton. Jetson Fernandes, he makes his loan move to Tottenham to join up with José Mourinho. And we'll also talk about the summer transfer moves from 6 months past to see where those players who made the big money moves, where they are currently in their first season of those moves. So before we do that, just a reminder to make sure that we get you guys to like and follow us on all of our social media platforms. Of course, first off, facebook.com/SeleçãoPod. You can follow us on Twitter @SeleçãoPod, also on Instagram @SeleçãoPod. You can email the show, SeleçãoPod@gmail.com. And of course, hit us up on our website, SeleçãoPod.com. We have all the episodes there. We have tons of information there. We've got the latest roster, the fixtures for Euro 2020, who will be our opening match. We sure as hell know who we have in our second and our third match, but yeah, just go ahead and hit us up on our website, check out our website, and just let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you like to see on that site to make the experience on SeleçãoPod.com as interactive and as positive and fulfilling as it possibly can be for you, our supporters and our listeners. So yeah, it's been a few weeks. We obviously had the last day of 2019. We had our Team of the Decade episode, which was a lot of fun. And again, thank you guys for making that as interactive and as fun as possible. As again, it was you guys, the listeners, the supporters of this podcast, who chose that Team of the Decade, and that was a lot of fun. And yeah, just glad to be back in 2020 with this first episode of the year, and looking forward for you guys to be joining us all year long. Obviously, a very important year for this last song as we try to defend our European championship. And yeah, we'll have some friendlies, I believe, next month, although those are still not confirmed. As soon as we get those confirmed, we'll obviously tweet those out and share those on social media. And yeah, we'll get you guys and take you guys every step of the way to Euro 2020 in what hopes to be a back-to-back championship run for our beloved Seleção. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get you to our interview with Sean Gillen. As he and I talk about the winter transfer window that included some big-name Portuguese players, right here on episode number 28 of the Seleção Podcast. So without further ado, we had so much fun with this gentleman back in the summer transfer window that we decided to bring him back to review the winter transfer window. And of course, we're talking about Sean Gillen of Portugal.net. Sean, of course, covers all the Portuguese players and coaches that are not plying their trade in Portugal. And there are many that made the move this transfer window, and we will talk to him about that for the next few minutes. So, Sean, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, no problem. Great to be back, and lots to talk about.
Well, let's get to the big move of the winter transfer window after many a transfer window that that saw him stay at Sporting. Bruno Fernandes finally made his big move to the Premier League, to Manchester United. First off, I won't talk to you as a journalist or a writer. I just want to talk to you as Sean Gillen, the Manchester United fan. What do you think of this move of finally having Bruno Fernandes coming to the Red Devils?
Well, mixed feelings, really. I think most United fans are delighted that it's happened. A little bit confused as to why it couldn't have happened in the summer. I remember when we spoke last time, I think both of us were trying to figure out why United, in particular United, because of course they were the team that were linked with him the most, hadn't met Sporting's demands, which seemed reasonable, and why it hadn't been done. You know, United are weak in midfield. So it's finally been done now, and as a United fan, I'm sort of a mix between excited and a little bit frustrated that this didn't happen in the summer and he didn't get the first half of this season to settle in. But I think he's going to do really well. Of course, he's already made his debut. I think even in that debut, which was maybe a bit of a low-key game to make your debut in, obviously a 0-0 against Wolves, and he did sort of go a bit quiet in the second half, but I think that he showed enough in that first half, some nice touches. He was playing the ball first time, which, you know, anyone who's watched United this season knows that the play's been far too ponderous a lot of the time, players taking far too long on the ball. Immediately you could see Fernandes was getting the ball out of his feet quickly, trying to, you know, quicken up the play. So I think United fans saw enough in that first game that they're quite excited. And I think he's actually going to do very well. I think he's got the kind of attributes that appeal to English fans, because he's got the quality, but he does have a little bit of tenacity about him. And he already, in that game against Wolves, he already put in a bit of a meaty challenge on João Moutinho in the first half. You know, he left a little bit on Moutinho in that, and I think United fans are going to like that as well, that he's got a little bit of tenacity about him as well. So overall, I think, like most United fans, maybe a little bit indifferent about United as a whole, but excited by this signing.
You know, as fans of this Sélection, during that tackle, we don't know who to cheer for or what to do there, but it is good to see. It is good to see that he has finally made the move. Of course, it's a $60 million move U.S. potentially could be worth up to $80 million. Sean, why do you think the time was now for Sporting to do it when it could have been done, as you mentioned, last summer? It could have been done a year ago. Why do you think the management team and those who make the decisions at Sporting, why do you think that they finally pulled the trigger now?
Well, I suppose if there's two clubs who could make a meal of this transfer, it would be United and Sporting, but I'm still inclined to sort of look more at United. It always felt to me that Sporting's demands weren't, you know, unreasonable. So, I don't know, I think that United probably should have been a little bit more efficient in their dealings with Sporting last summer, probably. Maybe Sporting just drove a bit of a hard bargain, but I still think the price is reasonable, and the deal that United got, I think, is a great deal. So, yeah, on this one, I'm probably not inclined to blame Sporting too much or look at them too much. I think this is, you know, United have one of the biggest budgets in the world. I feel, and I think a lot of United fans feel, that this could have easily been done last June or July. I think Sporting were always fairly open to the sale. You know, I think they knew it was going to be very difficult to keep him much longer. So, I mean, if it seems harsh to be be so critical of United after they've tied up a deal for such a good player. But I feel that this could have been done last year.
We're talking with Sean Gillen of Portugal.net. Of course, he covers everything Portuguese abroad for Tom Kundert's Portugal.net site. You could follow Sean on Twitter at Sean Gillen 9. That's SEANGILLEN and the number 9. You're listening to episode number 28 of the Seleção podcast, our first podcast of 2020. Thank you guys so much for joining us again. Sean, I will ask this because this is not Alex Ferguson's Manchester United. There is a lot of uncertainty and it's just not the same as it once was. As good of a deal as this potentially can be for Bruno Fernandes in his career and also for Manchester United, how much of a risk is there on his side for going to a club that, you know, Ole may not be there at the end of the season. Ed Woodward is just obviously the public enemy number one right now for United fans for the last few years, and the Glazers are no one's favorite people in Manchester. But how much risk do you think comes with this move for Bruno Fernandes?
Yeah, it would have been interesting, wouldn't it, if he had had the choice between United and a Barcelona or a Real Madrid or one of the other big clubs. I don't think that was the case in the end. I think there was some talk on the last day or two that Barcelona may be interested, but you got the impression that may have been somebody up to mischief to try and move the deal along a little bit. Obviously, he couldn't turn the move down. He had to come to United, and United is still obviously one of the biggest clubs in the world. But there is a little bit of risk there. A lot of the players who have come into United over the last 6-7 years since Ferguson left have not really developed. I think if you ask most United fans at the moment, their kind of favourite players or the players they believe in the most, a lot of them are the academy players, like a Rashford or a McTominay and some of the younger players. A lot of players come into the club with big price tags and stagnate or even go backwards or even just fail completely. United's decline over the last 7 or 8 years, whatever it's been, is not bad luck. You know, they are absolutely inept at running a football club. So in many ways, it is a risk for Fernandes to come into it. But I suppose there's always that potential there. United have so much money. If Ole doesn't work out, they will move him on and they will get someone else. They will get a Pochettino or whoever it may be. So there's always that kind of potential that any moment it could click back into being the United of before. I think there will be pressure on him to deliver fairly quickly as well, which is harsh. But, you know, this transfer has had so much build-up and there's been so much anticipation. He's sort of, I forget what he is exactly, 25 or so. So I think a lot of United fans are expecting something close to the finished article, and there's a lot to play for in the last few months of this season. So he is going to have quite a lot of pressure on him. But, yeah, I'm still optimistic. I think he's going to do really well, and I think United fans are going to love him as well.
Yeah, and as they should. He's scored 63 goals and had 52 assists in the last 2.5 years. Ever since his emergence onto the international scene, and it'll be interesting to see what he does as a Red Devil going forward. Two younger players, making their way to the Premier League are Daniel Podence, and you'll never guess where he went, Sean. He went to Wolves. are Wolverhampton trying something new here with signing a Portuguese player?
Yeah, I mean, it must be amazing for him to land at Wolves and see, you know, 10 teammates or whatever it is, that Portuguese staff and manager and so on. But he actually looked really good on his debut in just in that 15, 20 minutes he was on. And I was watching it on Sky Sports here in the UK, and Gary Neville was already comparing him to Eden Hazard, which is pretty strong. But he looked really confident. He looked like he couldn't wait to get out there, and he was causing United problems straight away. I think with him, there's probably a little bit less pressure on him because Wolves are having a great season. You've got Traore, who plays in a similar position to him, or at least a similar role in the team, has probably been their standout player this season. So I think that for him, he will get the rest of the season to bed in, you know, and get time to adjust before kicking on next season. But based on that debut, it looks like he maybe will settle immediately, which again is probably a consequence of this environment that he's coming into, where everywhere he turns there's a Portuguese.
And you know, and going back to Bruno Fernandes really quick, it seemed so funny to see them at the end of the match, and it was Bruno Fernandes exchanging jerseys, and I forget with who. But all of a sudden, Bruno Fernandes was in a Wolves jersey at the end of the game, and it almost felt like, yeah, that feels kind of right, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe United a stepping stone to that Wolves move.
Oh, yeah. Boy, you know, I don't know if anyone ever thought that would ever be said, and almost not in jest. What do you think of the other move? This one more of a new opportunity, kind of a fresh start for a younger player who has some Seleção aspirations in Jetson Fernandes. He makes the move, the 18-month loan move from Benfica to Tottenham, and we'll get to Tottenham on the coaching side towards the end of the interview here. But what did you think of that move for both the player and the club?
I mean, we've sort of touched on it there. A lot of young players are making these moves at the moment. I think with this one, it's more of a reasonable choice for him to make that jump. You know, a lot of people would say, you know, if you're struggling for football at Benfica, to go to the Premier League and to Spurs is a big jump. But again, he's finding a comfortable environment to go into. It was interesting that he mentioned when he was announced that his family already live in London, which was that's potentially a useful aspect of this. And of course, you know, Mourinho and his coaching staff will help him settle in. Spurs are still, I believe, in three competitions, so he will get opportunities. So even though it feels like it's a big step for him to get this fresh start under the pressure of playing at Spurs in that huge stadium and under a very demanding manager, he will get his opportunities, I think. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Finally, the last two moves we'll talk about in terms of the winter transfer were the moves, the two loan moves. One, Cedric Swadj, he stays in the Premier League, but he goes from Southampton to Arsenal. Southampton quickly making his replacement with Kyle Walker-Peters of Tottenham. And then one that I think doesn't really move the needle too much, but just in terms of adding depth to their attack, is Diogo Souza going from Shenzhen FC after having a brilliant 2019 with Braga with 23 goals and 11 assists. He is on loan to Benfica for the rest of the season. These obviously, as I mentioned, they don't move the needle too much, but I think they're both interesting moves for both players. What do you think about those moves for those guys?
Yeah, I think that we mentioned Diego Souza on the last time I was on, and to me it was a strange move for him to go to China, because he, you know, only just sort of broken into the fringes of the Portugal situation. So to go off to China when you haven't really done much for the national team yet, and you're 30 years old, was a bit of a strange one, I think. And he didn't do much in China, from what I understand. He scored a couple of penalties, but didn't really do much over there. I think this is a move that really will help Benfica a bit of depth, and I think it will help them, but I don't see him really making enough of an impression to force his way back into the national team. But you never know. I mean, this is why these players take these moves. You know, an injury can crop up to a player, you know, and you're in form at the right time, and suddenly, you know, you're on the plane to the European Championships. So I think a little bit similar for Cedric. I guess that will depend a little bit on how Arteta sees him at Arsenal. Is he coming in to be a backup? I think that's probably the case. And if that's the case, then again, it would be tough to imagine that he's going to do enough to push his way into the Portugal squad, where, you know, the depth in fullback positions is so strong. But nevertheless, it's a good move for him. And, you know, the same applies there. You know, an injury here or there, and he could find himself getting a run of games at Arsenal, and then who knows?
We're talking with Sean Gillen of Portugal.net. You can follow Sean on Twitter at SeanGillen9. Sean, obviously we've discussed the winter transfers, but we're about 6 months into the big summer transfers of 2019. And the two biggest money transfers so far have left a little bit to be desired. Of course, we're talking about the big move, obviously, João Félix going from Benfica to Atletico Madrid and João Cancelo going from Juve to Manchester City. Let's first talk about João Félix. Obviously, had a promising start to the campaign. He has obviously struggled since, both on the field and also with injuries. How would you rate his first half season so far with Atletico?
Yeah, I think there have been a number of reasons maybe for João Félix to struggle so far. I think that it's the first time since Diego Simeone has been at Atletico Madrid that he's been questioned by not just the media, but maybe the fans a little bit. So it could be that's the end of, or the start of the end of Diego Simeone's cycle there, which could be a premature thing to say, but that makes it a difficult first season for Félix to come into. I remember that Simão Sobroso had said last summer that ahead of the move that he thought that Atletico was a bad choice for João Félix because of the style of play. And he referenced that he thought that Griezmann, when he was there, had been weighed down by the defensive responsibilities at Atletico, and he thought that João Félix wouldn't be able to show his best. And he may have been proved a little bit correct on that, but João Félix hasn't scored in domestic Spanish football since September. So, you know, that's a bit of a concern, and he will have to, of course, look himself a little bit on that. Simeone tends to take him off a lot, from what I understand, which is never a great sign of a manager's trust in a player. But I don't think we need to panic on it particularly. I believe that he's regarded at the moment as a player who shows his talent in flashes, that he plays two or three beautiful passes in a game, or does a dribble, or shows a bit of footwork in a game. But in terms of his constant involvement in games, he drifts out of games. So, you know, I don't think we need to worry about it too much, because that could be just a first season settling in, getting used to the league and a different style of play. I tend to think sometimes that players, especially young players, creative players, being taken out of their comfort zone is not a bad thing in terms of building them as a player. Again, you know, these things can change very quickly. You know, he's injured at the moment, but he comes back, he gets a goal, and suddenly things change, and maybe you can have a strong end of the season. But we have to remember his age, and hopefully next season, well, you know, I'm sure he'll still be at Atletico next season. Hopefully then he can kick on.
Yeah, you know, reading, I think there was a column on Bleacher Report a few weeks ago where, you know, they had looked at the first half of the season so far for João Félix, and I think you nailed it as well. As the article mentions, you know, people are looking at the transfer fee and they forget to look at the player's age. He is just 20 years old. He still has his whole career in front of him, but it does you know, scream for some fans of the Seleção. You know, oh no, it's Renato Sanches all over again. It's Andre Silva all over again. He's a young player with tons of potential, but obviously, as fans of the national team, we want to see him flourish at the club level in order to give him the best opportunity and to give the Seleção the best opportunity on the field as well. So it's something obviously to monitor. I'm with you. I don't think it's anything to worry about. To be overblown about, for lack of a better term. But, you know, just something to monitor. And yeah, this could be a situation where Simeone is on his way out. But you also have seen players like Griezmann struggle in the beginning and then figure it out and then flourish and become, you know, what he's become for France and now for Barcelona. So it's probably a case-by-case basis. But in terms of worrying, I'm with you. I'm not there yet. We mentioned the other João Cancelo. He makes the $70 million move from Juve to Manchester City. Both of us, in the last time we spoke, we were kind of confused by the move. He's only made 10 appearances so far in Man City's 25 Premier League matches, but he is a pretty consistent starter for Pep Guardiola in the Champions League. He started four of the six matches and has played in all six. To me, Sean, I think he's still a player who's trying to figure out his place on Pep's team, and I think it's hampered him in terms of selection for the national team because he's just not getting regular football at the moment. But obviously, that can all change with a good Champions League run or a good run in the Premier League at the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking the same thing, actually, that if Guardiola sees him as a player more suited to the Champions League, that's where the big emphasis is going to be for Man City in the last few months of the season, isn't it? Because they're clearly out of the title race. The title is pretty much wrapped up by Liverpool now. So Cancelo will get his chance to, you know, take that spotlight in the Champions League. I think that, yeah, a lot of Man City fans, I don't think they're not really sure what to make of him because they feel they haven't really seen enough of him. As we mentioned when I was last on, this was an area that City aren't particularly weak in, especially, you know, Cancelo's favourite right side. I was at the derby the other night, the United City derby the other night, where he actually played on the left. But in terms of on his favoured side, they have Kyle Walker there, who's clearly first choice. So it was slightly a strange move in that regard. But again, in terms of keeping that perspective and not panicking too much, City's big objective for the rest of the season is going to be the Champions League. And if Cancelo can play in an important knockout game, they've got Real Madrid in the knockout round, then he will get that stage to show what he can do.
You know, let's also talk about maybe a few of the moves that have worked and have not worked from the summer. Obviously, you have players who signed big deals or had big transfer deals. Players like Gelson Martins, Andre Gomes. Although obviously we give him a pass after that horrific injury he suffered back earlier in the year. But players like Ronny Lopes, who have played exactly 21 minutes in La Liga so far for Sevilla. And then you have the moves that have been exciting moves and have kind of gone under the radar at the beginning of the summer, like moves like for that Wolverhampton made to go get Pedro Neto. You can see that Renato Sanches is starting to come around a little bit at Lille. And also even a player like Ruben Smith, who, you know, made the move to Olympiacos, that earned him some call-ups to the national team in October and in November. So, out of the positive and the negative moves, I guess let me ask you to give me one of each. Which one do you think has been the most positive so far? And of the smaller moves, what do you think has the potential to be a detriment to the player?
Well, I have to say, at the moment, there's probably been a few more that have been negative than positive. I think for the positive, we have to look at Sanches, because I'm so impressed with not just how he's performed over the last two or three months. He's really stepped up his performance, but I think there's a lot of maturity in the way he speaks about it. He often says at that time that he had at Bayern, okay, from a footballing perspective, it didn't work very well, but it matured him, you know, as a person. And when I listen to him speak now, that does come across. He's done fantastically well in the last two or three months. He's just so much dynamism in his play at Lille. And Lille is obviously, it's becoming quite a good spot for Portuguese players to go to, perhaps, you know, maybe replacing Monaco now as the spot that we maybe want Portuguese players to go and play. But even though he's getting a lot of attention now, he keeps saying, you know, this is not all I can do. I can go levels higher than this. You know, I have to keep working hard. So I think he's definitely the one that stands out for a positive for me. He took a little bit of time to adjust. He said himself that, you know, going from Bayern to Lille, it's a bit of a culture shock, and he got a bit of injury issues early on. But he's flying now. It seems that whatever Lille do, however well they play, Sanchez seems to be their best player a lot of the time. So he would stand out to me as the best story we've had from the players who left last year. The disappointments, unfortunately, there's a few of those. You mentioned Lopez. Bruma's been another disappointing one. I don't think he's scored in Dutch football since September or something like that. Gomez, of course, you mentioned Gomez, who, I mean, in fairness to Gomez, he played the sort of first half of the season before his injury in an Everton side that seemed like it was going nowhere. And of course, unfortunately, Marco Silva paid for that with his job. We would like to see Gomez playing under Ancelotti to see what he can really do there. Gelson, you mentioned, of course, is another one. Perhaps one of the more disappointing ones has been Rafael Leao, Milan, although, again, we can apply similar to what we said about João Félix. Leao has, I think, only scored two goals this season for Milan, so it's been a bit of an underwhelming experience so far, but he started four of the last six games, so that suggests that the coach sees something in him, and maybe with a run towards the end of the season, if he can, you know, play as much as that, he can get a few goals. He's playing with Zlatan, who seems to be a great mentor to him. So even with that one, which to me stands out as maybe the most disappointing, that Leao has gone to Milan and struggled, which maybe to some extent was a bit predictable, even with that one, I've got a little bit of optimism that he could maybe end the season on a bit of a high note, because if the coach is sticking with him and he's giving him football, that suggests that the coach believes in him. So hopefully he can repay that.
Yeah, and the recent move that Milan made to send Piatek away to give Leao. And even though even before the move he was starting with Zlatan, but for Rafael Leao to now be with Zlatan almost as a fixture, both of them up top, and it's nice to also see, like, on social media the relationship kind of budding there between both he and Zlatan. Although it does seem it's a little bit one-sided for Rafael to be posting stuff like that, but it does seem that he's learning, as you mentioned, a little bit from him, and that can only help with confidence going forward.
I actually think Zlatan may be a little bit underrated in terms of his influence on younger players. I felt that a little bit at United with Pogba. I think Pogba looked up to him and saw him as a bit of a role model. So, yeah, like you say, Leao seems to be posting a lot more stuff than Zlatan does. But, you know, as long as he's inspired, then that's all that matters.
Well, Zlatan does what Zlatan wants, I guess, as he has told us time and time again. We're talking with Sean Gillen of Portugal.net. Of course, he covers the Portuguese players and coaches abroad for Portugal.net. Before we get to the coaches and before we close up the summer transfer, let's talk about one summer transfer for 2020 that has officially gone down, and that is the transfer of Trincão going from Braga to Barcelona. He'll be arriving at Barcelona this coming summer. It was not a move that I don't think anyone kind of saw coming, but it's an interesting move given who is currently in front of him on the attacking side. Sean, what did you think of the move for the 20-year-old?
Yeah, a little bit surprised, and again, this continues the theme of a lot of young players making the move, which I do think worries a few people in Portugal. But this isn't an off-the-cuff decision, I think, from Barcelona's point of view. Yes, he's inexperienced at Braga, but when he won the under-19 European Championship with Portugal, when he was the top goal scorer and, you know, best player, Barca would link with him then. So, you know, Barcelona, I don't think, generally tend to sign these young players just on a whim. They put a lot of work into it. They would have been following him closely. And I think this is it seems to be a growing trend or objective for Barca and Real Madrid. They seem to be looking for the next best young players in that sort of 18, 19, 20 bracket. I think that might be a little bit of anticipation of the English Premier League. The financial power of the big clubs there is only going to grow, so they maybe feel they need to go and lock down these, you know, the hottest young players as soon as they can. Clearly, with his qualities, Trincao's qualities, Barcelona is a good fit for him, especially now they've made the change of coach. They had Valverde there for two or three years, and although he did quite well, I think there was a feeling he didn't have that Barcelona DNA in the new coach. However long the new coach is there, who knows, he's a Cruyff disciple, isn't he? So that suggests that Barcelona are trying to get back to that sort of Barca way of playing. And someone like Trincao, you know, he's got great feet and he, you know, takes the ball in tight spaces, can beat players, fits very well into that. But yeah, it did surprise me a little bit that it happened now, and maybe announcing it now adds a little bit more pressure on him for the rest of the season, because he knows that Barcelona will be looking at him, and maybe any drop off at Braga and, you know, they start to think about loaning him out or something like that. But if you want to stay positive on it, I think, and, you know, I'm sure like you and everyone else, I can't wait to see him playing for Barcelona next season.
And Sean, before we let you go, we'd be remiss by not asking you about the managers around the world, the Portuguese managers around the world playing their trade and leading their clubs. Since we last spoke, we've seen Marco Silva fired at Everton. We've seen the reemergence of the special one, José Mourinho at Tottenham, replacing Mauricio Pochettino. We saw Jorge Jesus absolutely take over the country of Brazil, so much so that Jesualdo Ferreira has followed him at Santos. And as of this recording, as of today, José Peseiro has taken over a South American team, a national team in Venezuela, the Venezuela national team. A lot of Portuguese managers around the world coaching and taking charge of clubs and now national teams. What do you make of the state of Portuguese managers around the world in 2020 right now?
Oh, incredibly healthy. Yeah, I mean, the Jorge Jesus thing, I think when we spoke, he was sort of just getting up ahead of steam with Flamengo. They were on a great run. And that, I think we spoke in early September. That just carried on for the next few months, and they just absolutely smashed the Brazilian title and obviously won the Copa Libertadores, and it's now all about whether he's going to extend there. And as you say, the influence he seems to have had on South American football, especially Brazilian football, Jesualdo going over there, and it seems that they get linked with, I mean, Pestero, I think, was linked with the Brazilian job as well, in the wake of Jesus's achievements. So he's been in the best story clearly over the last year or so. But I mean, we have to give shout outs to André Villas-Boas, who's doing extremely well at Marseille. They're unbeaten, I believe, since October. They haven't lost in France, and he seemed to make a great impression there from the start. I remember his first couple of games, I think they lost the first game and drew the second one. Even then, there were noises coming out that they were so impressed with his ideas and his communication and so on. And he looks like he's set to hopefully finish second there, which I think they finished fifth last year, so that's a huge improvement. And it's great to see him back, you know, such a talented coach. He's doing very well. Also should mention Pedro Martins in Greece with Olympiakos, of course. Daniel Podence, who we mentioned earlier, has benefited from working with Pedro Martins for the last 18 months. He was at Olympiakos last year when they finished second behind PAOK, who were undefeated. And the response of Olympiakos under Pedro Martins has been to be undefeated themselves this season. And they made a bit of an impression in the Champions League as well. You know, they went ahead against Spurs, they went ahead against Bayern. You know, they gave those guys, you know, a bit of a run for their money. So he's doing very well as well. It just seems that Portuguese coaches are just going from strength to strength. It's great to see. And I can imagine that he's going to start looking to Portugal to find their guy from now on.
Yeah, and we failed to mention Nuno Espírito Santo, who's just doing an absolutely amazing job
at Wolves. I mean, it's easy with the language barrier there if you just bring every Portuguese person and player possible. But he's doing an amazing job at Wolverhampton as well.
Yeah, and what's noticeable about him as well, you can see why he gets so much from his players, because he seems such a likable guy. I think the English media really like him as well. He gives fantastic interviews, seems a very humble guy. So you can see why his players buy into it. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't want to do him a disservice. He's obviously got very good tactical ideas as well. They're extremely well drilled, but you can see why he's able to continue to motivate them. They had a really good season last year. In their first year back up, you know, yes, they spent money and they were able to bring in guys like Leon Moutinho. Not often a newly promoted team would be able to bring in players like that. But nevertheless, the fact they've sort of been able to build on it now. So I think they finished seventh last year and now they're in a fight for the top four. So, you know, that's real progress. And we see Nuno sometimes is linked with moving on. I think he was linked with the Arsenal job, wasn't he, when that came up? And yeah. I think there was some talk of Chelsea last year. So, yeah, he's very highly regarded in England, perhaps a little bit more so than he was at Porto. So it will be interesting to see what happens with him. I personally would like to see him stay at Wolves. But, yeah, if he keeps on like this, then I think he will get some offers.
Well, Sean, I can't thank you enough for joining us and giving us a recap of the winter transfer window and you know, going back to what happened in the summer and obviously giving us your opinion on the coaches doing what they're doing around the world. You can follow Sean Gillen on Twitter at Sean Gillen, SeanGillen, and the number 9. He does great work for Portugal.net. And he's a great read both on Twitter and on the site. Sean, once again, thanks for coming on, and I guess we'll talk during the summer.
Absolutely. Cheers. Thanks for having me on again. Yeah, back in the summer, I'm sure there'll be more coaches and managers going all over the place.
And you know there will be, and we can't wait to have Sean back on to discuss all of the major comings and goings in the next transfer window. Again, give Sean a follow on Twitter. Just a tremendous job that he does for the Portugal.net site in covering everything that has to do with pretty much everything outside of the country of Portugal. Just great features on signings, on coaches, on everything you need to know about what kind of fingerprint that Portuguese players and coaches are making and leaving on the game of football around the world. So again, follow him on Twitter at Sean Gillen 9, SeanGillen. And again, give him some props. Let him know you heard him on the podcast and he did a great job for us today. I had mentioned earlier in the podcast, obviously the first podcast of 2020. I also mentioned the last podcast of 2019, and it was in that podcast because of that podcast that we reached a milestone for the podcast. We hit 10,000 downloads following the release of our last episode number 27, the Team of the Decade, episode. So it is mind-blowing to think that our show has been listened to 10,000 different times by so many people around the world, and it is a very humbling thing to think about, and I'm just very, very grateful for all the support that you guys have always given us here on the show, whether from day one or if you're just coming on. Just a great feeling to know that you know, I mean, 10,000 in a year and a half is not a big number when it comes to the world of podcasting. With all these guys around the world like Joe Rogan and Adam Carolla, Men in Blazers, you name it. But yeah, to have this little engine that could hit 10,000 downloads and counting means the world. So I want to thank you guys for being a part of that. and let's just make let's get more downloads. Let's spread that word. Big year 2020 is for not only this Les Sound, but for this podcast, as we cover everything that has to do with the defending, or with the defense, I should say, of this European Championship. And who knows, we could go back to back. We could be making history, and I want you guys to be a part of it. I want you to be a part of it here, and I want you to be spreading that word to get more ears listening to this episode, listening to this podcast, I should say, in 2020 and beyond. So my thanks to all of you for all your support and all your listenership. Greatly appreciate that. So that will do it for this episode number 28 of the Celeste Sound Podcast. Again, go to our site, our website, CelesteSoundPod.com, Facebook.com/CelesteSoundPod, at CelesteSoundPod on Twitter and on Instagram. And remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on any of your podcasting platforms. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a five-star review, a five-star rating and a review, I should say. If you're doing the Android thing, you can check us out on Spotify and on Google Play and on various other platforms. But as I mentioned, let's spread the word, get this podcast as much listenership as possible, as much visibility on social media as possible, and can't thank you guys enough for the support and to make this thing bigger and better in 2020 and beyond. So my name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode number 28 of the Celeste Sound Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My thanks once again to Sean Gillen for joining us on episode number 28 of our show, as he reviewed the winter transfer window that just completed here a few days back. Greatly appreciate his expertise on this episode and breaking down the major moves of the 2020 winter transfer window. So until next time, folks.